You're now on
Facebook. Call this meeting to order. Tonight we have Reverend Tommy Williams from the Williams Gospel Ministries to do our invocation and our Pledge of Allegiance.
First of all, I want to say well. Thank you for letting me come back. David, I said a while ago, I'm going to say it again. I want to congratulate you on your military career.
Thank you,
I want to thank you for your service. You had a long, dedicated career. I remember when you first went in.
That's a long time ago. Yeah, that was a pretty far long time ago.
About the same time I got a law enforcement.
There you go.
Thank you for what you've done for our country.
Sure.
Okay, let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this day that you give us. And let me say thank you on behalf of all of those who are gathered here today. Thank you for your many blessings that you give us. Thank you for life itself and for a decent neighbor that we get from you. Thank you for this city council that is here tonight. Thank you for the people who come. Of course, the people who, along with the city council members, work together to make this town a better place to live, a better place to raise our children and our families. For in the scriptures it said that citizens ought to obey the government authorities since they have established an authority to promote peace, order, and justice. So therefore I pray for the council, the mayor. I also pray for the people that are here tonight. Again, like I just said, the people and the council are here for one reason. And that's to make this town a pure beach, a better place. And Lord, we just thank you for all the things that you do for us, all the things that you give us. And ask for wisdom for the council to govern tonight in the middle of whatever the issues might be, whether there's a conflict issue or not. Ask that you give them a sense of welfare and for the true needs of our people who are here tonight. And Lord, I just ask that you allow them to do the best of their ability, the tasks that are put before them here tonight. I pray for the agenda set before them, so please give them all the tools that they need. And no matter what happens tonight, Lord, I just ask for the two groups who both have opinions on whatever the issues might be here tonight. I have no idea. But I know anywhere you have a council meeting and you have items on the agenda that might be controversial, I know that to make them right, you have to have both sides agree, both sides to work together on the issues. That's my main concern here tonight, is that everybody works together. Let's work for them and work together in the town of Curie Beach to get things done. Like I said earlier, it makes it a better place for us to live in and for people to come visit to. Lord, just be with us, lead us, and guide us into doing the things that you want us to do here tonight so it'll make this lovely town that we all love so much a better place. We ask this in your name. Amen. Let's stand for a pledge of allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started, I'd like to recognize someone whom we all love, respect, and admire. And that is Councilman David Hagler over here, who just retired from the reserves from the Navy after 30 years of service. And he retired as a captain, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Not only that, his ceremony was on the battleship down there across the river from Wilmington. Extremely impressive. And a fantastic speech that I believe touched everyone there in the audience. So I would like for all of us to give him a round of applause for congratulations. We're very proud of you.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
It's my honor.
Okay, approval of consent agenda. Do we have any changes, additions, or deletions?
No.
Okay, I have an addition for Dustin Robinson, who would like to be our representative on the New Hanover Committee for Americans with Disabilities. Nancy? I need a motion to add that, or can I just add? Yes.
I'll make a motion to add him as our representative.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any other changes? Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Make a motion. We approve the consent agenda with the addition.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Our adoption of the regular agenda. Any changes? Do I hear a motion?
Make a motion we approve as presented.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we now have a public hearing for the amendment to Section 80, Town Buildings and Facilities of Chapter 19 of our Zoning Code of Ordinances to exempt the town from setback requirements. Notice of the hearing was posted at the town hall and on the town's website on September 22, 2017. It was advertised in the Star News on September 27th and October 4th. Okay.
You have to ask for comments, I think. They might not figure out.
Is that what these comments are for, or do we have a separate sheet?
No.
Okay. Do we have any comments from, let's see, Larry Benton? Are you speaking on the public hearing issue, or are you speaking at the regular council meeting?
Public hearing issue.
Okay. Could you come up to the microphone, please?
My name is Larry Benton. My address is 502 South 4th Avenue, Curie Beach, North Carolina. Got to be honest with you folks, I'm not real good at standing up and people and speaking.
That's
okay. So I ask myself a question before I get here is, what's the worst that can happen? Worst that can happen is you need me. Y'all ain't leave me, are you?
No, sir, you're good.
No.
Good. If I stumble around a bit, please forgive me. But thank you for allowing me the time to speak to you, and I can only hope that your minds are not made up about this issue already. My wife and I purchased a lot in Curie Beach in the year 2000 with the dream of building my retirement home. In 2014, we realized that dream and started planning our new home. At first, we're not fully aware that the setback rules were different for quarter lots, which is what our lot is. So the first designs were too large to fit the lot. Now, this is prior to giving it to any kind of builder. We asked about getting a variance or an exception, and we were told, no way, no how, that is just not done, okay? The rules are there for a reason that included access for the fire trucks and emergency vehicles. We had to redesign the house at our expense to fit within the guidelines, and the second attempt, after we submitted it through the builder, was also shot down. And this was because the fireplace extended into the setbacks. So again, we went back and redesigned the house, got the fireplace moved inboard so that we would be able to fit within the guidelines. Now the town wants to exempt itself from the setback rules, the very rules that the fire department said they need elsewhere to provide safety to the public. I and everyone else have had to build by and live by these setbacks from the time they were put in place. This change will affect all future buildings of the town, construction projects. Question I've got is, why did this come up? Why is this even an issue? Were the architects not given what the setbacks really are. Does this body of government feel that, that everything is above the law it imposes on the common people? What rules, ordinances of the town will be exempt from next? Is everyone going to decide, well, we need a 50-foot tall building, so we'll just exempt ourselves from that and build a 50-foot tall building? You're setting a dangerous precedent. Will you folks just modify that ordinance and say, oh, no, we'll just build it, no big deal? All ordinances are in jeopardy if this change is allowed to pass. If this does pass, you approve it, then it will further exemplify just how out of touch you are with the everyday people that you govern. It will prove this council is no longer of the people, for the people, and by the people, but instead is of yourselves, for yourselves, and by yourselves. This should not be an issue of legacy building, to build this building. We all can agree that something needs to be done to give the fire department and the police department more room. More things need to be accomplished in that way. The price tag is extremely high, in my opinion. I've been a general contractor for 25 years, project manager for 40 years. This contract seems extremely high, but that's water under the bridge and we can't get there now. If you believe the town is above the rules it imposes on the common people, it is irresponsible, immoral, and downright dangerous. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. John Ellen? Are you speaking at the public hearing or in the public session?
The public session.
Okay. Would anyone else like to speak for the public hearing? Yes. Name and address, Chris.
How you doing? I just want to know the money that $5 million now, it's $5.5 million. How much is that going to be taken out of my pocket each month for taxes?
Arlen, am I correct in saying
we address a presentation.
Okay.
Did you already address that one?
No, we have a presentation.
We'll address that at our presentation. Okay. Anyone else like to speak on the setbacks? Okay.
Make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And Mr. Denton, this is further down on our agenda under old business. If you would like to stay, we'll cover any changes in the ordinance then. Okay? Thank you. Discussion and consideration of presentations to council. We have Bernard Robinson in and company. Victor, Mr. Blackburn will do a presentation on our audit for 2016-17.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for allowing me to be here tonight. Arlen has kind of prepared a presentation for you that we'll go over together. I understand that you had drafts of financial statements emailed to you today. I don't know if you had an opportunity to read through it, but at any time, if you have any questions about anything in there, please let me know. That's what I'm here for, is to address. The first slide is wanted to point out to you that there was a new accounting standard that needed to be adopted this year by the town, and that related to, it's called GASB 73, and it related to pension plans other than ones that were covered under GASB 67 and 68. 67 and 68 relate to your OPEB, your other pension employee benefits, as well as the state retirement plan that the state and the town employees participate in. The area that this GASB 73 impacted you was only resulted in the governmental fund and the law enforcement officers' special separation allowance. When they originally developed GASB 67 and 68, they did not factor those types of plans in those two GASBs to cover them. So they had to come up with a third one. to cover all pension plans, no matter what it is. The impact of this GASM 73 required the town to restate its beginning liability for the town. And, you know, Arlen and I was talking earlier that the normally when you do a restatement for something like this, it actually would decrease your net asset position, meaning that there was an additional liability that you had to book because of this adoption. But the town's restatement was actually an increase to net position. That means that the liability under the calculation for GASB 73 was less than what it was prior to the adoption of this. So you're actually increasing the net position for governmental funds. There's no restatement associated with the business type activity because it only affected the law enforcement separation lines.
So is this because of how Arlen was accounting for it before?
No.
Or because of something else?
I'm not 100% sure because I'm not an actuary, but I know that the town had actuarial studies on the LEO in the past. So when they factored in these changes for GASB 73, your liability just went down. So I don't really know. I can't pinpoint why it went down, but it's not that we overstated the liabilities.
No, that's right.
I think they actually, this requirement was it. The actuaries had to calculate the liability differently too. So.
Right. Okay. And that special allowance is a North Carolina state allowance, right? It's not something the town chooses to do. It's required by NC state law. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
The next slide is your total net position, which is, in other words, your fund balance or the equity of the town. You can see. Back in 2015, it was a little over $14 million, and now for 2017, it's about a little over $15.5 million. The burgundy line item is your governmental activities, which increased from $7.4 million in 15 to about $8.7 million in 17. Your business activities was about $6.6 million in 15, and this increased to about $6.9 million. Those are fairly good net positions to have. Not a lot of towns that I do work with have such a strong net position for it. This is more of a breakdown of the governmental activities that we talk about. Out of the $8.6 million in 17. The largest component of that is your investment in the capital assets, less the related debt. You can see that's about $5.5 million of the $8.7 million for 2017. And that number has grown from 2015 just primarily to all the capital projects that you've done over the last 3 years. The restricted amount is a small portion. It hasn't really grown, but those restrictions is related to state law or to the specific types of grants that you enter into, meaning that the money that you have has to be spent for a specific reason. And until you spend that money, it will stay in this restricted net position. You can see that the unrestricted, which is the leftover balance, this is what you use to appropriate each year to balance your general fund budget. And 2015, it was about $2.5 million. It increased in 16, but went back down in 2017 to about $2.5 million. So you've got a good solid trend there that it's not a trend of continuing decreases over the last 3 years. So. This is a breakdown of your business type net activities net position. And similar to the governmental activities, the largest component of this is the invested in net assets. You can see you know, it's about $4.2 million in 2017 compared to about $6.9 overall. And the remaining balance is your unrestricted, which is, has grown a little bit over the 3 years from $2 million last year, 2.3, to up now to $2.6 million. So again, you have a good positive trend there for your unrestricted. For your fund balance, for your governmental funds, what we wanted to point out to you is again, the unassigned is similar to your unrestricted, and it's gone up over a 3 year period from $2.2 million to $2.6 to $2.7. The assigned is the beach protection, and that is money that you, as a council, has decided to set aside for anything like beach nourishment or right-of-ways or anything like that associated with beach property that might not be covered by the state depending on what they do with their state budget. The assigned for stormwater was about 3 or 4 years ago, you decided to set some money aside for some improvements for your stormwater. You can see that in 2017, it decreased about $500,000, and that's because you actually used that $500,000 to do some improvements in 2017. The capital project, assigned capital project, was zero in previous years, and you do have a capital project fund this year that has some, if you want to say, unspent money in there. And because it's unspent, you assign it because it's going to be used for the capital project funds in 2017, 2018. The state restriction, state statute is a calculation that the state statutes has on how much of the fund balance is, quote, restricted, meaning that it cannot be used for appropriations for budget purposes. It's really, in a nutshell, what it is basically taking your receivable that haven't been collected by the town and saying that those revenues associated with those receivables that haven't been collected at year end can't be used to balance your budget, the appropriations, etc. And the restricted for the streets, that is a power bill funds that you have, and you get appropriated amounts each year for that, and then you would typically use those monies to do street repairs or repavements of streets. So that money, you know, when you, in the future, when you have to repave some streets, you'll see that go down.
So Arlen, is the capital projects, is that the main lift station that's not spent from last year?
That's actually the price for a fire station in town hall.
Okay. And then on the streets, just for the citizens, we typically wait until we have a big section of streets to do. So you'll see the PAL fund build for 3, 4, maybe even 5 or 6 years, and then we do a lot of paving at one time. That way we maximize the project. So in another year or two, I'm sure Sonny or Jimmy will tell us their streets that we have to repave, and that's what we do. And really, for those people that live in the new part of town that was annexed in the late 90s or early 2000s, because we had a healthy PAL fund, that's why Curie Beach was able to pave so much faster than Carolina Beach when Hanby / Atlantic Beach got annexed by the two towns, and Carolina Beach took a lot longer. Thank you.
This is a comparison of your budget that you adopted for the general fund last year to the actual amounts. As you can see, your actual revenues for the year was about $4.8 million compared to the $4.7 million that you budgeted. So you actually had a positive or favorable variance of about $150,000. So you received about $150,000 more than what you were expecting to receive. Your expenditures was budgeted about $5.7 million, but you only spent $5.2 million. So you had a savings, if you want to, of about $540,000 during the year, where you didn't spend as much as you thought you would under the budgeted amounts. you can see down in the budget that, you know, you had a deficit, meaning your expenditures were higher than your budgeted revenues, and you had an appropriate fund balance of almost $1 million. But you don't typically spend that. You did have a decrease in fund balance of a little over $300,000 that will eat into that appropriations, but it, you don't really, that is more of a budgetary balance figure, and then ultimately the $301,000 will roll up into that, the fund balance, and reduce it.
Good. So, one to Arlen and the department heads that are here. First, great job from Arlen, because he forecasts how much we're going to get in revenues, and that's a complicated thing. You can see he's conservative, which council has supported throughout the time he's been here. And then on the spending side, from our initial budget, all of the department heads, I think, are below on their budgets. I haven't looked in the last month, but I think every department did exactly what we asked them to do, which is only spend what you need to do to meet the services that the citizens require. And I think it's a really good story. The math doesn't always shake out, but on both sides, we're, the department heads are doing exactly what council's asked.
It's a $690,000 swing. That's pretty good news. Mr. Blackburn, if you were to say A through F, what type of work is being done here relative to managing the finances of the town, what would you say?
I would definitely have to give the town an A. I mean, you... The thing about that has impressed me about the town over since we've been working with you is that the town has always is forward thinking. You've never been proactive. I mean, you've never been reactive and waiting for something to happen before you moved on it. You've always been proactive, thinking ahead, and so, like, you know, you implemented certain tax increases or certain utility increases because you knew you needed to have those monies for future projects instead of waiting until you had to spend the money on those projects and then have to play catch up. So I definitely can give you an idea that you've been very proactive in thinking forward of what is coming up and trying to plan for it now instead of just waiting until it occurs.
Thank you, Mr. Blackburn, for that candid response. Arlen, I want to thank you for the financial guidance you provide to us as a council to help us stay in this good condition. And like you said, David, the department heads for their fiscal responsibility. Thank you all.
The last slide is a breakdown of your water and sewer fund and utility fund. You can see you operate revenues a little over $2 million. Your operating expenses a little less than $2 million, to where you had operating income of a little over $100,000. The non-operating revenue and expenses typically is primarily, I think, your interest expense for debt related to that. That ultimately decreases the net change in net position down to about $90,000, but again, it's a positive number that you're adding to the net position. That you know, if you think about this positive number is going to be used to replace, like, your water and sewer lines or your utility lines in the future. So it's not bad to have a positive change, because either you build up the reserves like you normally do, or you're going to have to borrow additional funds down the road to do these repairs and maintenance type projects on your water and sewer line.
Right. And so, just speaking for this fund, since I get to deal with a lot, Arlen, Sonny, and Jimmy have done a great job of looking at the rate structure and bringing to council what we needed. I think the thing to point out here is, if I do the math right, that's 5% off. Right, so revenues versus expenses, which means if you think how much water can change in the town just by rain and stuff, being within 5% of how much it costs to operate the system by setting our rates is really good. And also, I want to appreciate council, the fact that as we talk about rates for both water and sewer, two things. One, Carolina Beach helps impact our sewer fund, because we send most of our sewer to Carolina Beach. So working with them, we've stayed very close. And the second thing is the fact that over the, I guess, last 5 years that I've been on council, with this mostly this council, we've continued to look at the rates and make sure we keep the rates low for our older retiree population and the less users of water, and really impacted the rates on the high-end users because those are the ones that really drive our expenses, right? So if you think about how much water is used, as it came out in the spring when people were upset about the water costs for irrigation, it's important for council to understand that we should continue to target high users of irrigation and sewer in the rate structures, because those are the ones that will drive huge capital costs for the town. It's not the small house that uses 2,500 gallons a month. It's the house that's using 80,000 or 60,000 gallons a month. Enough of those will drive us to other wells or our aquifer having problems or all the issues that I talk to you guys about a lot. And so I just want to make sure as we continue to look at the rates, and for our citizens, if you're a heavy user of water, you should figure out other ways to do that. That's not the right thing to do long term. And I will continue to encourage the council to make sure that the heavy users bear a higher burden. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to address that, but I just think it's important for council to understand this. This is really good work by Sonny and Arlen to be within 5% of how much it costs to operate a very complicated system with users that can go change it anytime they want.
Just to add one point to what you said, David, on water, I don't see any of the people who are concerned about the irrigation in the audience this evening, but two numbers you should remember. Approximately 48,000 gallons of water are used a year per household. Some use less, some use a little more, but the average is 48,000. The three primary accounts we have for irrigation use 750,000 gallons a year.
And those are households?
Yes, and that does not include their normal use of water. That's just irrigation water. So if you see folks who get into that debate, maybe you can share those numbers.
And I'd just like to pile on, as long as we're talking about it, just to make sure that the citizens of Cary Beach realize that what we're trying to do is make the service pay for itself. But we don't try to overcharge, with the exception of the secondary water meters. We're trying to charge just enough so that we can pay for the service and put enough aside so that we can keep the service in good condition.
Well, that's actually required. That's the requirement. It's an enterprise fund. It has to pay for itself. So we're not allowed to make a profit on it. We charge. And I think by shifting more to the heavy users, the lighter users will have a lower rate in the long term, or the rate will stay the same.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Mr. Blackburn, can you comment at all on our debt situation, where we stand in relation to other towns, or what the state laws are?
Well, the state law basically says that a town or municipality or any government entity can't borrow more than basically 8% of their property tax assessed rate. I'm not 100% sure. Let's see. It actually comes out to a ridiculous amount. Like $64 million. Your legal debt margin is a little over $64 million. I mean, you could actually borrow up to $64 million. Nope. So, it's not like you are just out there borrowing money to buy stuff. Really are just borrowing money to betterment the property here in the town of Cary Beach. So I think overall I would say that you're in line with what I would expect, and you're definitely not pushing up against any concerns that the state would have or I would have.
In comparison, at $64 million, what our debt service is at around 2.9?
Our outstanding debt, I think,
That one was probably around 3.2.
Okay.
You've got about $2.1 million in your governmental activities and about $1.1 million in your utility.
Okay. I missed the 1.1 then. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good.
Well, we certainly appreciate the job you did for us and have for several years now. And as everyone else has said, we are so fortunate to have this young man who is very, very conservative with all the rest of us, and we appreciate that.
Right.
So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be here, and I want to thank Arlen and the town employees for making our audit as simple as possible. It's not a very simple process, but they are prepared for us, so it helps us get in and get out so they can get back to their day-to-day duties. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jason Sutton, a presentation on the results of our pilot paid parking program.
Good evening, Town Council. I'll also be joined by Stephen Hernandez, Vice President of Municipal Services for SP Park. Thank you for having the time tonight to hear some information about the results of the paid parking pilot program that we completed over the last 2.5 months, and also hear some of the things to consider when thinking about implementing a paid parking program in the town of Vero Beach.
Having
trouble
following here.
One of the first things that we're going to talk about is a quick introduction to SP Plus. So my name is Jason Sutton. I'm the regional manager of municipal services. I oversee our operations in Georgia, South Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama. Close to home here, we operate the Town of Carolina Beach Parking Office. We've been doing that for 4 years now. And kind of coincidentally or interestingly enough, Stephen and I both started our careers in parking at Carolina Beach 15 years ago. Stephen hired me to write parking tickets. He was the facility manager at the Town of Carolina Beach Parking Office. So
you're the one that gave me the ticket?
Possibly. We've been familiar with Curry Beach's program, or the park situation here for quite some time. We're familiar with the island quite a good bit, so we're very excited to get involved in this program here and kind of get a bit more data so we can see what's going on with parking here and hopefully make some good recommendations and provide some good information for you guys to make good decisions going forward. So, SP Plus is the largest parking management service company in North America. We operate 3,700 locations. We have 22,000 employees, and we oversee 2 million spaces. So we won't dwell too much on that. We can get to the business of the pilot program, but some of the things we can point out real quick are some of the other locations that we operate. Carolina Beach being very similar to the town of Curry Beach, and also point out City of Decatur, which is something I'm involved in on a day-to-day basis, which is really concerned with the visitors coming to their town and maintaining a small town, community-oriented. So, just to give you some background on the paid parking pilot, the locations that were selected to test paid parking were the lot next to the Quick Mart at 112 South Fort Fisher, the lot next to Bud Joe's at 102 North Fort Fisher, and the lot next to Community Center at 110 North Fort Avenue. So, all in all, between the three locations, there was 109 spaces. When this was initially set up, the rates were put into the mimic Town of Carolina Beach's rates, but within our program window, Town of Carolina Beach quickly raised their rates to be $2 an hour, $10 all day. So there's a little bit of change in that. And then just here's the scope of the program, ran from July 7th to August 30th, which basically made up 60 days, which were weekdays, 25 days, which were weekend days, and three of those days, what we would consider holiday. September. Three of those days would have been holidays, which we would consider Labor Day, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So we'll run through a few slides that talk a little bit about parking utilization. We put together a few matrices that would give some insight to these three properties and how they were utilized over the course of that program. So what we did here is we broke out by location, the days of the week, and the total number of transactions. So at this point, this is just a number of purchases, no revenue amounts, and what that equated to was, as you would imagine, our weekends were the busiest time with 2,269 purchases. All in all, what that worked down to was an average number of daily transactions. So during the weekdays, the average transactions were 19 transactions per day, but on the weekends, 91 transactions per day, and over the Labor Day, three-day holiday, 125 transactions per day.
Would I read the 2269 as paid hours?
Not yet.
No.
That would just be number of transactions.
Number of transactions.
So somebody could have bought an hour transaction or an all-day transaction.
Okay, all right.
So, all right, so this looks like I got off the formatting there. I apologize for that, but this is what the revenue looks like for the same time period. So weekends, weekdays, and Labor Day. What it averages out to on the weekdays, the total amount of revenue that you were averaging was $77.38. Total amount for a weekend day is $420.37. And then Labor Day, we had $650.70. So first one transactions, this one, and then also in this, you can kind of see a little bit of the utilization on each of the properties. So our busiest property would have been the 42 North Fort Fisher Boulevard, which was closest to the beach. It's in the central business district, most visible, most easily accessible. Second to that would be the 112 North Fort Fisher, which you had to take a little bit of a path to get to the entrance of. And then our lower performer, 110 North Third, which is kind of off the beaten path a little bit, and you really had to know what was back there to get to it. So one of the things that we look at when we talk about duration and people's parking habits is the average ticket price. So that would be out of all those transactions, what was the average that people paid? So if you take all the lots together, people paid on average $4.67 per transaction. That equates to about 3 hours of time purchased per transaction. So for each community, and I would say it's a little bit skewed because you have people who pay that all day rate pretty frequently because they're going to go and say the beach, and I have some people just pop in for a short amount of time to quick to go a quick walk. But that's where our numbers stand. What we wanted to do was start looking at the average revenue per space. So we have a quick little formula here to give us total number of spaces, what each space was making on weekday, weekend, Labor Day, to give us a little bit more granular idea of how the program was working. So again, as all trends led, weekdays were our lowest revenue producing, and Labor Day weekend holiday was our highest revenue producing, and with the weekend still well exceeding what we were doing on the weekdays. So what that's showing us is, and it backs up what you were seeing when you saw the properties and when you see beach traffic, it's pretty quiet during the week. And then you're seeing an escalation ramp up for all the people who are coming out to enjoy the beach and the pier and the weekends. So one of the things that we wanted to look at to give you guys a little bit of idea of taking the data from the pilot program and extrapolating that out to the potentially what a full parking system in the town of Prairie Beach would look like. What we did is we used our average revenue per space for the pilot program, and we imagined what a full season of operation would be. So that's April 1 through October 31. And then we took the area between K and M, and we counted the number of currently marked spaces and came up with 392. So when you multiply those out, there's a potential revenue of over $300,000 in a paid parking system here, based on what we saw in the paid pilot program.
Now that's a revenue without any outlay for anything throughout
exactly
the year.
Right. Yeah, this is just all based on revenue.
Let me ask you, did you take into consideration the parking lots at all for the crossovers to the beach, or
yes,
only on the street parking?
So this included all the parking lots down to H that are on the street. So HIJ was the beach access and the area directly across from Fort Fisher. Then it was the area around K, down around the ocean, and then the on-street spaces from H up through M.
Okay, because I believe we have some other parking lots.
Yeah, I can pop ahead a little bit while we're talking about it. I do have a, we'll just go through here. So we'll get to the map here in a second, but the parking utilization, the total revenue came out to $17,589.50, with the expenses of operating these three lots to be $18,192. So I think, unfortunately, with the timing of the program and missing a July 4th weekend where we could have seen a lot more revenue. Had a wet August, the location of one of the lots, and then the idea of a free versus paid parking system. We came up a little bit of short of what we would like to see. SP Plus is going to go ahead and credit back the $542.50 to make an NOI of a zero. So to make this a revenue neutral pilot program. Let me pop to this map here real quick, and then we can come back. So, one of the things we'll talk about is paid parking strategies. So when you are considering potentially implementing something, some of the things to think about as you develop a system, just for instance, we took this, and this is where we got some of our data from. You're going to want to look at the entire area and look at the revenue generators and the drivers. So for K Avenue, what we put in there would be short-term parking area. That's an area specifically where you would want to encourage turnover. And you would also want to set aside areas within the program that would allow all-day visitors, fishermen, beachgoers to park for extended periods of time. So to get those numbers, on the left-hand side, there would be one more beach access and one more area across Fort Fisher Boulevard that would have been included in those counts. And then we just extend down to where the yellow long-term paid spaces are on Fort Fisher Boulevard. So within that was 392 spaces. And I think you're absolutely right. There are other areas that you could look at to increase the total number of spaces. But for this, we just focused on those that are closest to the central business district.
So the 392 does include the short-term?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It includes the 100 block of K and the 200 block of K, along with a few of the spaces that stretch down on the beach area there. So,
yep.
And, you know, this is just hypothetical. It's just something
sure
to kind of consider. But, you know, the thought process there is that you still want some of those spaces nearest the pier along the beach to be short term. But then also, as you get a little bit further down the way there, those are great destination spaces for people who are going to go to the beach all day. So you want to maintain that there.
So how did you add J Avenue? Because right now there's not marked spaces on the west side. So you see the main block in blue, the very one towards me, right? That's J Avenue. There's not marked spaces there, but you colored it. I'm just interested in why and how you counted that.
Well, if it was no marked spaces there,
right,
then it wasn't counted. It was only where you could have the spaces already marked on the ground is what we used. So that is an area for potential,
okay,
that you could expand into, but that section specifically isn't included in that 392.
Okay, I just want to make sure I understood.
And even on I, you know, there are spaces there, but up a little bit further, there is potential, you know, to add, you know, 20 or 25 additional spaces. It just depends on
Not because of our will, so there's not.
So the dog park is, you couldn't do it further up? No.
No, because of the, that's a well site and you can't park there.
So that, well, that wasn't included, but there are, I'm sure, a few other areas where you could have some on-street spaces, and even there were some spaces that weren't included because they weren't really close to that central business district area.
Okay.
So, really, when we looked at trying to develop a strategy for a paid parking program, really what we're focused on is trying to provide parking for everybody. So if you're coming off the ferry boat and you're heading north, you would want somebody to hopefully stop and find a space and get out, you know, and that would be short term. And then if someone's, you know, overflowing from the north down and they're looking for a place to park all day, you want that space there available too. So it's kind of finding that balance, you know, to keep attracting different customers and think about the revenue generators there. So let me pop back here. So that was our parking utilization. And then so just to kind of start the idea of thinking about a paid parking district, you already have a number of defined parking spaces, but the idea would be to go and see what would be included in that paid parking area and what you would not want to include in that paid parking area. Basically creating an overlay area. With that, you would think about your enforcement hours. So in that, you would think about your different revenue generators. You know, if it's preserving spaces for retailers and restaurants, maybe certain time limits that you would want to have paid parking. And then rates and penalties, those go hand in hand. And really, you know, I think for Prairie Beach, a lot of us, what we were talking about is the long and short-term parking, and then consider employee parking too, because that's not something you'd want to address once you have a system in place. So just to check back on that map and mention something about employee parking, the lot on 3rd Street, you know, is one that we have identified. Hypothetically, it's something you could think about as an employee-type parking lot where it's just off the path far enough that it's not very visible, but it would be very beneficial for folks working in the CBD that they didn't have that much farther walk to get to work.
One last thing I wanted to, probably not the last thing. Excuse me for that. But the total potential revenue of the $300,000. You use that extrapolating the usage that we had during those two. So there's, you would tell me there's upside in that then, is what you're
saying. I would, yeah, because that was only taken into consideration Labor Day.
Yeah.
But we also do have pretty increased traffic on Easter and Memorial Day and 4th of July. So you would get the benefit of those holiday weekends.
So. What are the expenses, the other part of that side, right? So that's revenue, yeah. That's not net. What's the expenses for that type of plan, for supporting 392 spaces with all the other stuff?
Well, I think that comes to how technologically advanced that you would like to be on the program. So,
with what we use? So with what you use out there for the pilot?
So what we would recommend would be focus on pay by app. You know, we would hope that that would be something we could use here, but certainly the same kind of pay stations that we used in the pilot program would be positioned around the pay parking areas. We would just have to really kind of define it and see who might be able to speak to some of the costs and how to consider that when thinking about a program of this scale. But yes, certainly there's going to be startup costs associated with it. And depending on how you structure the program, those are things that could be upfront or spread out amongst, you know, a term.
How long do those pay stations last in an environment like out here?
I would comfortably say 5 years. Usually they say 6 to 7, but here our luck with them is that before you know, we run out of parts for the inside of the cabinets start to give away, so you start having rusting at the bottom and things like that. So, we currently have 17 of those units in Carolina Beach. We keep them on an annual warranty. So anytime a part breaks, we send it back to the manufacturer. We get one replacing it the next day. So you know, our printers and things like that, they do get corrosion in the building centers, but they're pretty good about replacing them. So really, the only limitation of that is how long we can keep the cabinet, you know, from running away.
So, what's the range, right? We'll ask the gallon size. Yeah,
so one of the things that we do is we look at each of those areas where we have paid parking. Now, those on-street meters along Lake Park, those would be single space meters, right? Fort Fisher, sorry. Those would be single space meters. And so each space would have its own individual right? And then the multi-space meter we were able to utilize at each accesses and all the service lots that we have during the pilot program. And then also along where the pier is at, we would try to strategically locate those base stations potentially, or we could look at installing single space meters. We really sort of have to get some public feedback in terms of who they prefer, multi-space meter or single space meter in that particular area. But generally speaking, those base stations will cost anywhere from $7,000 to $8,000 per, depending on the configuration of the equipment.
What we would try to do here is with the idea of using pay by plate, so your license plate is your credential. It allows you to spread those meters out a little bit. And what we've done in the city like Decatur is we allow people to pay it any year. So with each accesses, you may be able to have a long stretch that's on both sides of Port Fisher Boulevard, but you ask everybody to pay the meter closest to the beach access, since you would imagine 99.9% of the traffic is walking to that beach access. So that helps cut down on the number of units that you actually need to get. I'm sorry, we don't have a
number. No, I understand. I mean, I understand they're doing a formulation. I'm just looking at the revenues on page 7, and $7,000 a meter, only one of the lots paid for itself. I know it wasn't the full year, right? So when you put a big number like $300,000 up as revenue and don't put the expense side, it's aggravating, at least to me, because some of our citizens get the view of, hey, council, you're not doing your job. Get the $300,000 and pay our bills. But that's not the real number, right? And so my concern is, well, there's three concerns. Number one is, if council considers this, which I'm fine if we do, we've done it a few times, the private property owners of these three lots can really drive whether this can work or not. Because if they decide to say, we're not doing this, and they make their three lots free, then we will lose money again. So first off, those private property owners have to be involved. Number one. Or they build, but as long as those lots are empty lots, they can kill the program by just saying my lots are free. And they will. I don't know if they will or not. I'm saying council needs to talk to them if we're considering it, right? The second one is, if council's considering this, not, I think it's a great winner thing. I'm not volunteering to lead, however. I'll let you guys lead. But if someone wants to take this as the thing, the second thing is we need to work with the police department building inspector on ordinances around parking in the right-of-way, because all of the old part of town, all of our citizens consider the right-of-way their private property because it's right in front of their house. In fact, it's not. So our roads are 50-foot roads, 25-foot roads, so on both sides of their house, all over the old part of town, there's right-of-way, and we don't have ordinances right now that can say you can't park there. And if we push people back with paid parking, they're going to be in that right-of-way. So the ordinances with P&Z and the building inspector and the police department have to be ahead of this if we're going to do it. And then the last thing is we need to be really tidy on the expense side, because the last time council looked at this in the early 2000s, we basically broke even. So we didn't make any money for the town, and we basically considered aggravating all of the citizens by telling them you can't park in the town's right-of-way anymore, because we're going to make ordinances that we're going to have to enforce, or you're going to be unhappy that people are parking in your property. You know, your property is town right-of-way. I'm glad we did this, because it shows the numbers that at least we talked about last time, and I think it's well within what we thought would happen when we started this. It's going to break even. We actually lost $500. Actually, you guys lost $500, but the town actually saved a little bit of money because we didn't rent the two lots that we were renting before, or the whatever, the one set of lots, right?
Right, the one lot.
And I don't know if you guys want the feedback you heard.
Didn't
Sarah,
make any money.
Yeah. Would it be helpful if we were to come back and provide you with an operating budget as well to give you a little bit more?
I think that will be the first thing. If council's interested, I encourage the mayor to find someone else. If council's interested, that we need an operating budget and we need to meet with the owners of those lots to understand what their future plans are.
Yeah, because I know one of those, the owner wants very, very much to build on it. I mean, hopefully we'll expand the business district and that lot will no longer exist in a couple of years. so that really we don't have a lot after we do that.
Yeah.
But again, I'll ask you, and I don't know if somebody directed you to only consider the Central Business District, but we do have parking lots and other crossovers all the way down to Ocean Dunes.
Yes.
And did you consider at all, you know, the number of spaces or, you know,
well, I think initially we were just trying to give you kind of how to think about that data that we're generating and apply it across your system. So we don't have direct recommendations of your entire town limits of how to handle that parking, but so we just kind of looked at the areas that we thought were most utilized and where they had the most impact on the, you know, the businesses.
Yeah. And I think that's what David's getting at, because this is the fourth presentation I've sat through since I've been on council. And each time there's something that's left out, or no, we only kind of considered this as a possibility. We've never even talked about exactly how many spaces do we have.
Sure.
No. No? I mean, yeah. We have a lot of spaces, but we've never said.
No, we have.
Okay, this
exactly
is how many we have in all of our crossovers. Plus, this is what we have on K and Atlantic and Fort Fisher that we're willing to give up for paid parking, and this gives us a total of X.
Yeah, we would definitely be more than happy to come back and look at the total system, and we can pull some of the data that we generated from the pilot program to give you a much broader scope of what it would look like as far as an actual program. I don't think that would be an issue at all.
You'd like to provide us with a geographic boundary? And then we can run those projections for you and take that under advisement.
And I don't know that that's something we've ever made a final decision on. Would we want them in every single parking lot that's a crossover, or is our Ocean Dukes that's so far out there we might as well not even mess with it? I think we need to decide exactly where on K Avenue do we not it? Do we want it or not want it? How far down Fort Fisher? Only in the one block from K Avenue, two blocks from K Avenue? Do we want individual parking meters, or do we want it by every block or two? Do we want it in all of Atlantic? We've never actually said what we want.
That's because we don't think we all agree.
Yeah. We need to, before we have this gentleman spin,
yes,
continuously right. spin, we need to decide what those boundaries would be, what those general rules would be, what would be supported by the businesses that are donating lots, et cetera. All things that are very valuable pieces of work. But otherwise, you're going to come up with something, and there's going to be four reasons why that's not exactly correct. My position is I would prefer that we had a definition before we spin you up to an expense profile.
Sure. Well, that's, you know, this is strategies. You know, so
yes,
if we wanted to come
right.
here and talk about each of these sections of our business, that would get you guys thinking a little bit about, you know, some of the different kind of equipment, some of mm-hmm. the area of the program, the idea about paid long-term, short-term, those kind of things. So a lot of what you're talking about are things that are covered, you know, in a couple of the other slides. So I mean,
we
can have some more conversation about it. So one of the things that I think would have been helpful to our pilot program, and certainly something to consider when we're all looking at a full system, is how do you have wayfinding signage? You know, how are you informing people who are unique visitors to the island? So they're not confused on how to get to the public parking areas as easily as possible. So some of the things that are nice, you could do color-coded signage to denote certain zones, you know, short-term, long-term. And then you can also think about your traffic plan. So I know directing people out of these properties or into these properties in a way that helps the traffic flow of Curry Beach. So make it so when everybody's kind of flowing through in the summertime that they're instead of impacting, that they're actually helping the traffic. And I think a great thing that can be incorporated into parking signs is town branding, so that you can continue to have, you know, a specific logo or like, you know, that they are in care about town of Curry Beach. You know, a lot of what's going on with parking now.
Thank you. Bye.
A lot of the interesting innovation that's happening in parking like right now is happening on people's mobile phones. It's happening online. So a lot of what we're moving towards are how we can interact with customers, not just at the point of sale, but before they arrive at Perry Beach, during their time here, and also when they leave. So would things like wayfinding. Yes, sir.
Would it tell them that there was this lot was available spaces on the app?
So some of the things that, you know, you can get a predictable guidance by payment, but it's not as accurate as if you added in some additional technologies, things like the pay-by-play LPR, things like that. So anytime that you add in something, it increases that, you know, maybe it's at 8%, you add in the LPR, it's at 90%, correct. So, and that's important. You want people to trust the app. And so if they're going to come into Perry Beach, it can bring them right to where, you know, most probably that there's a space available for them to park, so it's less time cruising and circling and looking for a space. It's also a great way to promote businesses or promote events. So if people are working or going on to a Perry Beach branded app, it's a way to reach out to them and let them know that there's an experience happening here at the island that they can come and partake in, and also here's where they can park or follow these links. For retailers and businesses, the mobile online application is a great way to work on validation programs, even couponing. So things that we've seen are people are able to get a discount at a store if they show their, you know, they purchase parking.
Let me ask you.
Yes, ma'am.
All this equipment is yours. You would own it throughout the entire process. We wouldn't buy it from you or... Because there is another town very similar to Curie Beach that, you know, went through this, and they leased the equipment through a bank that made it extremely economically feasible for them. Do you do something like that, or do you strictly own the equipment and we're paying for the usage of it?
I'll let Stephen some more information on how
You know, I think when you're opening up a new program, typically what we encourage is more of a management style approach, which is very similar to what we did for this pilot program. Because if we were to go out and own the equipment on our own, then it sort of changes each other's motivations, right? And we could do an operating lease, and it's a bill back to the city, and that's probably where the town rather. That's what we would prefer to do, because when we start taking on exorbitant amounts of risk on a deal like this, and if the revenues aren't there, then motivations and quality of service, all of that sort of changes, right? And we want to avoid those situations. We do most, 90% of our contracts are management style contracts, where there's a shared partnership and relationship between our client and the company itself. So I would encourage you to consider more of a management style approach rather than us giving you a guaranteed lease payment, or you're giving us an annual fee of a certain amount. And I think when we go through the exercise of establishing, so if you go to the next slide, Jason, you know, our number one strategy, and this goes back to Councilman Craig, his comment, right? You know, we really need to begin with the end in mind here, right? We need to understand what it is the town is looking to achieve through this exercise. And then from there, we can build you a financial model and an operational model that supports your desires. And then as everybody evaluates that program, we can tweak by adding additional spaces, we can tweak by changing rates, and then we can see how the model works and adjust from there. But we really need to understand what it is you are trying to accomplish, what your goals and objectives are. And then from that point forward, we can give you the program that you're looking to have. I'm going back 15 years, I'm trying to remember exactly where I was at when I was started running the Carolina Beach parking operation. But I want to say our annual expenses were somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000 to $115,000. And probably around that time period, the program was generating between $250,000 to $300,000 in revenue. And then now today, that same program, it's certainly expanded in terms of the number of spaces, but you certainly know our revenues.
Sure.
On the beach now, I mean, it's...
If you took out the Furman Park revenue, it would be over $800,000.
Say that again?
$800,000 without Furman Park revenue.
That's not what their budget says, because that's what I just looked up. And that's what I wanted to ask you about. So my issue back to expenditures, so Carolina Beach, at least their budget, and I'm not saying that what they've got online is correct, but, and this is 2015, $405,000 for parking revenues and 1.13. So this is old. I can't find their 2017 one, but $1.1 million for Freeman Park. So their revenues were $405,000, and their expenditures for parking, and I don't know how they break it, because they don't break it, was $312,000. So they made $100,000, not counting rent.
They have 1,200 spaces, too, roughly, don't they?
The numbers I quoted were from 2002. And
yeah.
But I don't know.
I just Googled their budget, because I'm interested, because what I'm trying to figure out is that $300,000 in revenue, what it is in net. Right, and I think, and this is MBA math, so it could be way off, right? But we'll let Auburn's MBA tell you. But I think it's between, at a best case, $60,000, and more realistically, like $30,000, or 10%, right? And that's not counting parking tickets, which I haven't, y'all have talked about. I'm not sure how those go either, right? Which I'm not saying is, I mean, it's real money. So, and I've told council this the last time we talked about it. There's some real money there, but it's not like what people think it is, right? Carolina Beach, if they didn't have Freeman Park, they would be having the same argument we're having, right? And we're much smaller.
And our expenditures would be significantly smaller as well.
So. Oh, right. Yes. Okay. So, I mean, I don't know how much you spend on Freeman Park. Y'all don't even do that, right?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, you do that?
Yeah,
so that's issuing the permits? Okay.
Could be. We also do the campground on Freeman Park. So
okay.
We have ambassadors on the island.
Okay. So y'all.
On the beach.
So some of your expenses there. Okay.
So a lot of that kind of shares back and forth.
That's what I'm saying. I can't see it in what they've got in their budget.
Historically, the County of Carolina Beach program had seasonal manager allocation.
Right.
And then in 2009, that program transitioned into a full-time manager. So then that adds to the expenditures. And then there's some other shared expenses that occur with bookkeeping and so forth. That occurred throughout all 12 months. So the program has evolved as the revenues and the program has expanded, right?
Right.
And so those adjustments have been made.
Okay. I mean, my concern is still the same concern I've always had, is to significantly change how people perceive their property versus town property mm-hmm. in the old part of town. How much is that worth? I don't know the answer. To me, that's where it always gets down to, is we're going to change. It'll be a huge change to the town. And it was interesting to see this year, there was a lot of pushback, but I don't know how many residents actually parked in those lots. I mean, I parked in them once, so I paid you guys $4 or whatever. But I did not see anyone push back into the third row yet. If meters were in all the beach accesses, I think that would happen. Because people park there now. On the big weekends, you can see people parking in people's lawns, like on E Avenue, where I live. There's a sign. The people on the north end of 2nd Street, between 2nd and 3rd Street, they have a sign, no parking here, that they pull out on the weekends and put there, because it happens. Mm-hmm. And it will happen more, I think.
Well, I think you're 100% right. As part of looking at an overall strategy, you're going to have to look at those areas that are not paid parking areas and anticipate adding some additional signage to let people know whether they can or not park in those right of ways.
And so is 10 to 20% upside the right way to look at it? So if you said your expenditures versus, I mean, you guys can't be 50%, right? In your other small towns, you know, your expenses versus your revenues, is it 10% the revenues that you get as profit? Or whatever, you guys are going to take some profit, or is it 20% or 30%?
I mean, it can vary significantly. Right. I mean, a lot of programs that we've been a part of, I mean, typically the municipal account will see anywhere upwards of 60%+ of revenues they get to keep.
Hmm.
I started the City of Myrtle Beach's parking program, paid parking program in 2004, and so I went through taking a great town like Myrtle Beach, blue collar town, right, that had been paid for years and decades, and then transitioning that into a paid parking program, it presented itself with a lot of challenges. And That, I believe, you know, first year we were under budget on expenses by about 30%. We were also short on our revenues as well, but the net was favorable. The return is still favorable compared to the budget. That program has grown and evolved. And if, you know, when you look at Myrtle Beach today, where they didn't have a paid or years ago they didn't have a paid parking program, and you see everybody sort of doing their own thing. Now you go back to Myrtle today and it's managed, and now you've actually created little pockets of small businesses and entered the parking business, right? And so you've got, you know, from the competition, and everything looks a little cleaner, and it's managed appropriately, right? A lot of those can be looking Wrightsville Beach. I think Wrightsville Beach today, the parking revenues represent maybe 15% of the town's general fund, right? And a significant amount of their general fund revenues come from Carolina Beach, positive impact. This isn't necessarily, this whole presentation is done really to provide you guys with what the program can be potentially, but you need to decide what you want those, what the program can look like. And then, like I said, we can provide you with the revenue, the expenditure, the projections. And we've been doing this for quite some time, and you know, we've been pretty, you know, good at it, right? And if you give us the opportunity to at least come back to you with more concrete numbers, then I think, you know, you guys would be in a good position to make the most appropriate decision for your citizens.
Okay. Good.
The final slide here is, you know, just like Stephen said, talking about the strategy, beginning with the end in mind, comprehensive planning, so the things that you're thinking about, where we're going to go, if we're not going to go to paid parking, and then anticipating future growth. And so I think a lot of what the traffic here on the island is growth off the island. A lot of people move to the Wilmington area because they come to the beach. So we're seeing very heavy weekends up north, and I'm sure that's trickling down as they run out of convenient places to park there and feel that that's totally occupied. You know, the people are looking for beach accesses to park in. So, you know, one of the things to move forward with is to look at your ordinances as you get closer, and some of the things that we've already discussed here is how you deal with private paid parking lots, you know, what are the hours and the rates that you would put into place, penalties. If you're going to consider something like vehicle immobilization, and also if it's something that would be a third-party operator in-house. And we've already gone over a few, but we'd love to hear any feedback, and if there's any other questions.
I guess I would like to say thank you for all the work you've done. Thank you for helping us through to get to this point, so we have some solid information. We have some work to do. And also, thank you for leveling it up. So I appreciate that.
Sure. And we'll look forward to coming back and you guys some more. So, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you guys. Okay. This is on our agenda to be discussed under old business. So why don't we move to our next person who is speaking. John, are you speaking as John or as chairman of the planning?
John.
Okay.
I'm John Ellen. I live at 181 C Block Way. Over the last few years, I have been the town's representative to the Metropolitan Planning Organization in Wilmington as part of their CAC, which is the Citizens Action Committee, and helped in the preparation of Transportation 2040. They are getting ready to start Transportation 2045. The first meeting is November the 8th. I would like to stay on as your representative to that organization.
We've already told them that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I asked you a couple of months ago and I had already reported to Mike that we would like for you to stay on as our representative.
Thank you for volunteering.
Now that's only until December. We'll see what happens next month.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might have to give that up.
Okay. Discussion and consideration of committee business, Board of Adjustment, Community Center.
No.
Nothing. They're not
I said,
doing
no.
anything at all?
No.
No plans coming up? No educational
well,
programs?
Well, okay.
No
I wasn't really doing
Myrtle
a commercial.
Beach,
no, but they are going to have a wonderful arts and crafts to make lights again this year. So look at the things on the website, and they're very reasonable, and they are very beautiful, those ball wire balls with lights in. So.
Okay, that's good.
Good guys.
Okay.
Marketing committee.
Nothing on marketing?
Yeah. No, nothing on marketing. They're looking at what's coming up for the second half of the fiscal year. Planning and zoning.
We did not have a October meeting. I did come at basically your request and review the plans of the new facilities.
Thank you. Shoreline access and beach protection, Dennis.
The committee is getting closer. The committee is getting closer to being able to present to the council a multi-part sign to replace many of the individual signs we have all of beach accesses. So, committee can, or the town council can look forward to seeing a rough draft in the next month or so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
Non-town committee reports. John's already given his non-town report, and hopefully at our November meeting we'll have a report from the county ADA committee. Any other non-town reports? Ports and water?
No.
Nothing exciting?
No. We have they've done the measurement data, but I'll have to speak with John and figure out what some of that stuff means. The two of us should be able to do that.
Okay. Oh, I'm sure he can explain everything to you. Okay, department head business, finance.
So in your agenda package, you have some information regarding the different options for financing the project for the new fire station and the town hall renovation and expansion. So I thought I'd just quickly walk you through what the process was for obtaining the various quotes that we received. We were required to do a RFP for financing. I sent that out to seven different banks. The request was for a loan not to exceed $5.5 million. That doesn't mean we're going to take a loan of $5.5 million. That was just to build flexibility in the process with the timing that we needed with the state treasurer's office. I also requested that the proposals include a loan term of 15 years and also 20 years. And I'll just say out of the seven RFPs that we sent out, we received proposals from two banks. So with those two banks, I'm really only presenting the most favorable one, which was from BB&T. The real question in my mind isn't now which bank. I think that's my recommendation, is to go with the BB&T proposal. The question is whether we use a term of 15 years or 20 years. Their proposal was for 15 years, 2.58%, or for 20 years, 2.98%. And with both of those, it would be a little additional expense of some legal and underwriting fees of about $2,900. So what I put up here, since we don't have the exact amount of the loan until we receive the contractor bids, which I believe is scheduled for next week.
This week.
So I think there's been a change that I think it's now next Tuesday, I believe.
24th.
Yeah. What I've used here is three different potential financing levels, and again, only potential, and a lot of this for illustrative purposes, just for whether we want to go with the 15-year term or the 20-year term. So I'll kind of use the $5 million loan example at the top, where I show the two different terms of 15 years or 20 years, what the interest rate is. I then show the first year debt service payment for each one. I've also included the final year debt payment. It's a little bit different for this type of loan than, let's say, your own mortgage or a car loan. It's actually considered a level principal loan. So that means that the exact same amount goes to principal for every payment. So actually each year the total debt service decreases. So that's why you'll see from the first year to the final year, it's decreased by over $100,000, the actual debt payment. So the next column is the total interest over the length of the loan term. And then the last column on the far right just shows the difference between if we were to go with a 20-year loan or a 15-year loan, so the additional interest for that extra 5 years.
Okay.
So what I wanted to do here, I know it looks like a lot of numbers, but it's to try to translate what would that mean in regard to how we would pay for this. Again, the same information. Again, I'll focus more on the $5 million example. Working across, you see the total debt payment for the first year. Then there's a column that says general fund share of the debt. Based on calculations of square footage and everything, it was determined that 88% of the loan would go to the general fund and 12% would go to the water and sewer fund. The water and sewer fund portion will come out of the operating revenues of that fund at this point. The other part for the general fund, the largest portion, would be paid for using the property tax increase. So again, the first example with the $5 million, if we were to finance over 15 years, that would translate into about a 4.6 cent tax increase. To finance over 20 years would be about a 4 cent tax increase. The far right column shows what the impact would be, annual impact on a home valued at $350,000, which is about the average valuation of a property in the area. So with the annual increase to pay for the debt for a 15-year loan would be about $162.05. 20 years would be about $140 per year. So not a significant difference, only a little over $22 per year. When you compare that to the amount of the additional interest
that
I showed in the prior slide.
So, Mr. Hall, this is where your question came up about how much would it be monthly?
Yes.
The worst case at the bottom for 15 years, if we spent the 5.5, which is the worst case that we're looking at, would be $14.80 a month for the typical homeowner. If you have a really expensive house, it'd be more. If your house is worth less, it'd be less. So if your house is $350,000, you're the average Curie Beach citizen is $14.80 a month.
Thank you.
If you live on the beachfront, it's probably three times that. And if you live in a really small, old place, it might be less than that, right? So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good.
But I tried to summarize what does that mean. So again, I'll just focus on the $5 million loan amount. And as we said, if you were to finance for 20 years rather than 15, it would cost an extra $527,500 in interest. I then looked at how many taxable properties there are in Curie Beach. It was around approximately 2,400, give or take a little bit. So then the average kind of additional interest, so that 527,000 divided by the number of properties, well, so per property it's $220 is what that additional interest costs.
Right.
If we work across to the next column, I was just looking at, well, what's the, if we, instead of going to the 20 years and incurring the extra $5 million or $500,000, well, the average increase in taxes, the difference is only $22.05. On that last slide, over 5 years would make that $110. So we net across to, it's actually, I don't want to call it a savings, but it's a, in a way, it is a savings of $109, almost $110 per residence, $300,000 average price for residence. So the things that need to be evaluated is that slightly higher tax increase at the beginning, or weren't paying the additional interest over the length of the loan.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that with everything, right? So if you pay it off faster, you pay less in total, but you got to pay today's money versus tomorrow's money, right? And that's the struggle every one of us has with every car loan we take, every house loan is, okay, can we afford it now, or are we going to pay for it next year or 3 years from now?
Right. And what I was trying to show here is, you know, what we were really talking about for doing the 15-year loan rather than the 20-year loan. The impact on an average.
Yeah, no,
that's a pretty easy decision for me. I'm at 15. I don't know where you guys are.
I'm at 15.
I agree.
Well, I mean, you know, it's great to have a good influence when you're young, but my granddad always said, get out of debt as fast as you can. It pays off. I don't think he ever had very much debt anyway, but I've had lots over my life. Seems like I keep getting more. And I think, you know, if you can afford shorter, and that's what council has to decide, right? Can our citizens afford $14.80 at the worst case a month for the service increase that we get from expanding all this stuff, right? That's what we're really talking about, right?
Yeah. They can pay less a lot longer.
Right.
Or they
but it's
pay,
not that much less. Right. That's what Arlen's showing.
Or they
it's
can
not
pay a little
less.
More now, which will actually turn out to be yeah. less later.
Right. No, I think I'm with you guys on consensus. 15 years is the smartest way to go.
John?
I think all these numbers are built around no growth in property. And we're going to be, on the average, built out by the 10th year of this. So there'll be another 100 and some properties contributing to
well,
this.
Yes.
So it'll actually, in the long run, this, like Mr. Baker says.
Well, you're an optimist, but I'm with you, right?
We would so hope. We would
that
hope
is the worst case.
Yeah. We would hope so, but there right is no guarantee.
Excuse me, Captain.
Yeah, but well, I think the issue is when you start talking about the future finances of the town, it just takes one hurricane to change them drastically. What we have to always consider is, okay, you know, average is the best way to look at this. I like how Arlen does it, and many of the things we talk about is we talk about the average cost of a house, right? And so then you can decide, is my house worth a lot more than average or a lot less than average, so you can turn it into your money, right? Because it's easy to do that calculation, or it's fairly easy. And then I think it's just always, whenever we talk about spending any money, is the money we're talking about spending, is it required by a state rule? Is it going to make sure we protect the service level that our citizens expect, right? And what I appreciate all of council and Arlen and the department heads is whenever we start talking about spending money, they can break it down to that. This is why it's important. Either there's a federal or state rule, you know, there's a requirement, or this will help us on our service level, right? It'll help us, you know, in our discussion, our public hearing last Monday, we got an email and the person said, why do you even have a firehouse? Well, I mean, because our citizens expect the service level that's required then, you know. That citizen implied we should just do away with the Cure Beach Fire Department and either Carolina Beach or the county. That's what their email implied. And from my standpoint, that would not meet the service level that our citizens require. Because the response time that having the Cure Beach Fire Department allows us protects their fire insurance rates. It lowered it 8 years ago. And so when we talk about those kind of things, if you don't factor in, just because you don't see the use, even though it's in all of our notes, so in our consent agenda, you can see how many calls the fire department went on. It's posted online. You can see how much service level you get from that. You can see the police department report, which talks about what they talked about, right? All those things, the reason the council considers any of these issues is either we're going to do something because the state or feds tell us to do, or we're trying to make sure we're servicing the citizens to the level they expect. And so this is the same thing. It's like, okay, we want to give the citizens what we think they need, and sometimes they tell us, and sometimes we just sit up here and try to figure it out on our own, but normally they tell us. And then we try to make sure we spend the money right. I think this is a good way to look at it. From my standpoint, I think the citizens wouldn't want to be in debt for 20 years. They'd want to be for 15 years. But I don't know. That's what I think.
I would agree with you. And also, when Chief Hagler instituted the new standards for the fire department, it affected positively everybody's pocketbook, every single person in town who had fire insurance. I think the average amount per household that fire insurance went down was around $400. So we've been paying $400 a year less ever since that's occurred.
And we don't want that to go back.
No, we definitely don't. Well, and the citizens expect the service now. So if you look at the fire department reports, I don't know how many, citizens assist calls that our fire department goes on, but I know I see some of them when I'm in Newton because I get a text and it's citizens assist. That's not a fire, but that's what the fire department's doing. And there's other stuff like that. The water rescue today, fortunately the person got out, but that's the fire department because lifeguards aren't on now. And whatever weird thing that happens, either the police department or fire department respond when they're called by the citizens. A flare out in the ocean that one of our citizens saw, we go look around for a while and then go back to the firehouse. There's all kinds of things. Public Works needs help putting up barricades. The fire department gets called for that because they're the resource for the town.
Well, I would like to share one story that I haven't even shared with the rest of the council. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, a gentleman came in my office and was talking about his wife fell earlier, I believe, either earlier in the summer or late spring, and hit her head on something in the house. And it so happened our police chief was less than a block away, but most of all, two of our officers from the fire department responded within 2 to 3 minutes. And by the time the ambulance got there, if the ambulance had been the only thing coming from the other side of the bridge or even from Carolina Beach, she would have bled out and she could have died. And he was very, very thankful that we had our firemen right here who could be there to help her. And so I hear those stories occasionally and unfortunately don't always share them with you.
I have a personal story. I fell off my ladder, shattered my spleen, they had to take it out. The ambulance came, the police came, the firemen came, and took me to Hanover. I was like 5 minutes before, if I would have just gone in and laid down, I would have let him turn over.
Well, I'm glad we were there.
So,
And now that we have firemen on 24 hours a day, it's cut our response time at night considerably. And so I know several of my neighbors really appreciate that. So, meanwhile, on to business here. What do we need to do, Arlen?
Need a motion.
Need a motion and also to adopt the applicable resolution, which if it's for the 15-year term, that would be
17.20B.
R17-20B.
Yep. Make a motion we adopt 17.20B for a 15-year term not to exceed 2.58% interest.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Excuse me. Administration and Recreation. Yeah, I think it's now colder outside than it is in here.
Yeah, for one day.
The town applied for a Penn Water Management Trust Fund grant, a planning grant, last year, I believe, to study the feasibility of putting an additional stormwater infiltration system in our beach access is from E to J. These infiltration systems treat stormwater runoff, first half inch, and clean the water using the sand before it enters into the ocean. So we did get approved for this. It was a cost of $2,580. That's the town's cash match. We will have four different groups, NC State Engineering, NC DOT Hydraulic Engineers, Coastal Federation, and AU Comm Engineering Firm. So it's a partnership, a clown partnership. And we have a year to get this grant done. So I'm asking for a motion from council to enter into the contract with Clean Water and Management Trust Fund for the planning grant for the feasibility of installing stormwater infiltration systems at beach access with UTJ at a cost of $2,508 to be paid from the stormwater fund.
Did you say E to J or every outfall we have?
E to J only.
Only E to J.
The ones in the north of town, we have them now at K in the Oceanfront Park, M and N. And L, but north of N, it's all private property. Well, there's the small areas that we have are not large enough to handle.
Okay.
Yeah, I would like to say, because I know Jim and I were there, I wish the rest of you could have been when Mike, our professor, came down and brought several of the professors that he works with at NC State and his department head and the dean of the School of Agriculture, and spent an hour showing them everything that Public Works and the contractor had done years ago to put in the systems that we have now, and how very successful they are and how they are models for the rest of the state. And I truly believe his department head and the dean of the school were so impressed that if anything comes out of this planning grant for future development, their dean will really make a concerted effort to find grants for us to help put those in. This is not to keep the town from flooding nor the street from flooding. This is strictly to filter that water so that when it comes out of the pipes and your children or grandchildren or the tourists on our beach are playing in it, walking in it, it will be much, much safer, much, much healthier for them than it is now. And we are very proud of the systems they put in already. I wish we could have all 15 of the additional ones, but these are the ones that could be the easiest. And I, you know, whenever he comes back, I really impress upon the rest of you to try to have a chance to talk to him, especially about one in your area.
Yeah. So, but this is strictly for study. This is not to plan
anything.
Right.
This is to study or
this is
develop
to figure out
a plan.
Yes.
A plan and for the best way to do
right.
it.
And also
future.
Look at innovation if there's something we can do. We had a good talk with Public Works Director and Dr. Virchel the other day. Can we look at increasing the capacity of what it holds as it's filtering it to slow down some of the in the heavier storms? So we do want to do some type of innovation too. And then if it comes back positive that we think it's feasible, then I would come back to you and ask if you want to apply for a grant with Clean Water Management Trust Fund to install.
Do they have anything that does more than the first half inch?
Not right now. And I got laughed at quite often when I talked about that.
Okay.
That seems to be about the model, at least the heavier storms. If it's steady rain, it's very easily the first half inch. But some of the studies and the monitoring that Dr. Virchel has done on the ones that we have when they were first put in, it retained all of the water in those trenches and none of it in the outfalls.
When the first one was put in, the first half inch was the yearly average type of rain.
Mm-hmm.
It has since increased.
Yes.
Yeah. My thought, though, is, and I should have, if the professor were here, I would have asked him, is that at a half an inch an hour, does it actually cycle enough through that it's actually processing everything?
Yes.
So that's really what the question is. I mean, it's going to handle more than a half inch of rain. It's
there's some type
of a speed that is going to overwhelm it, and that's
and
just
it,
what I was trying
it
to
does, It has gotten overwhelmed, and you can see when it's gotten overwhelmed because it blows the safety cap off,
we still get
some water taken care of, but the majority of it goes like it did used to in the old days, straight out the pipe.
Right? Yep. Okay.
But the first half inch is what contains most of your pollutants and your fertilizer and your
your street
runoff. That's an excellent point. That's something to think about.
Your grease and your oil. And some of these we are looking at possibly in the beach access parking lots.
Yes.
And we talked about the other day, 2 points. You catch it in the parking lot, you send it out, it goes into another one in the dunes, and it gets double cleaned before it hits the
right.
Yeah. Plus it's the stormwater, I mean the street stormwater.
Okay.
And apparently it's saving us money in dune grass.
Because it washed out.
Areas where the boxes are,
yeah.
Yes. It's just lousy with dune grass.
Yeah.
And they think it's possibly because of the nutrients that are
being left behind.
Being filtered.
Okay. So what do you need from us?
Motion to enter into contract with Clean Water Management Trust Fund for planning a grant to explore feasibility of installing stormwater infiltration systems at Beach Access E to J Avenue at the cost of $2,508 to be paid from the stormwater fund.
Second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Let's see. Where are we here? Building department. Oh, are we going to talk about the development line?
Yes, ma'am. Just wanted to update you. We are on the agenda for the November 7th and 8th meeting in Atlantic Beach, but I don't know which day it is yet because they haven't updated the agenda.
Okay.
It was canceled because they were worried about some of the effects from Hurricane Maria.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks ago.
So should we just continue this meeting to that meeting so we can be there to vote whatever they need us to vote in front of them?
I mean, schedule.
I mean, how many times have we voted on this now?
Three.
Okay. You can pass that on to them.
If
right?
enough of us get
yeah,
there,
agreed three times. Can
well, that's why I said continue this meeting there and just show up.
Thanks, John.
Okay. Okay, fire department?
Nothing.
Anything special, Ed? Harold?
No.
Glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
Police, police department. Oh, where did our chief go? Public Works, Jimmy, any particular, how's the, I see they're still working on it. When are they going to be finished?
I say about the end of the month. I mean, it's come along.
Okay.
Good. I'm sure the citizens know how they would like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? I know we ran into a lot of problems. So, for council, if you don't realize why that project
yeah.
is.
Yeah, we don't.
We don't.
Well, they don't. So.
They ran into lots of problems in the connector pipes down there and had to
Reline.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the right word. Reline multiple pipes down there. So, that's really what slowed us down. But I know that. This one's dragging on a lot longer than Sonny and Jimmy expected, or me, and I've got lots of calls on it, so we want it done too. Right, Jimmy?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
Old business. So, I have some questions, right? If we're ready, right?
Of course. Go right ahead.
So, one, thank you, Mr. Benton, for your presentation. John, kind of, I know P&Z discussed this, and they made it as a general thing. I'm a little concerned about it being general, but I am interested. What are the specific areas on the current design that impact the setbacks?
The walls, or the edge of the building along K Avenue.
K Avenue.
Along 7th Avenue. That area is zoned B2.
Right.
So setbacks off of K Avenue and 7th Avenue would be 20 feet.
Right. So even though per Mr. Benton's issue, so for a private residence, the front is 20 feet, the back is 10 feet, the sides are 5 feet, right?
Sure.
In the residential areas, right? The issue that's hitting us, and how many feet is actually hitting us first on K Avenue, which would be the front, I think, in the current design?
We're within 2 feet of the property line on K Avenue.
Right. Within 2 feet. So we're asking for 18 feet. And then what about 7th Avenue, which, because we can't get Sunny Point to let us use property like they used to, how much are we within on 7th Avenue?
Well, currently we're going over our property line. We're having to, as you know,
Well, when it goes out, so after 7th Avenue is closed.
I don't know exactly how far we are from the property line there.
Well, do you remember that,
we do, you know, we do have to remember why we are doing this. We originally put together a two-story building to meet requirements. That building was more expensive than a single-story building, so in an effort to save money, we brought it from a two-story to a single-story building so that we could actually fit that footprint.
Well, I agree. I just want to understand. So, one, I want to flesh out the issue, right? Because in my mind, I know we talked about it, but it's been a few months. I've been traveling a lot. And I retired, so you get slower, I guess, if you do that, right?
Maybe that's worse.
I probably killed some brain cells with some Navy and Army guys. But I think our initial motion, which I tend to agree with Mr. Benton for different reasons, because the town has a lot of different properties in residential areas. This one's not in a residential area, but we have properties, I think, right across the street from your house, right? But I'm not sure.
Pretty close.
Well, I looked at 4502, and I was trying to do it in my math, and I couldn't. But Public Works down there has properties on both sides of residentials. Then we have the property up here that's beside residentials. Yep. And then we have this building, which the design doesn't expand this into the setback to the north, does it? This part?
No.
It's just the firehouse, right?
Yes, sir.
So I think from my standpoint, and I know what Nancy wrote for us, is for all town buildings, but I would prefer, one, I want to build the firehouse because I think it's the right thing for the town. We've talked about it for multiple years. And two, Craig's exactly right. We dropped from two stories to one story because we got sticker shock, which I think was the right thing for council to do, but we still have to meet the requirements. So, I mean, my sense to the council is we should make this very specific, just like any other variance, right? Not generic, because the town has how many variances basically you inherited?
I believe we have three variances in
town. I was going to say four, but I'm not positive. Right. So Mr. Ben's exactly right. The town has, and honestly, I would say I was one of the councilmen that have, when we interview P&Z people, we push them to not be in the variances. So P&Z has held the line. That was one of the questions I always asked, because if you look to Carolina Beach, all the variances they have up there have caused them nothing but problems in their citizens. Well, I shouldn't say all, because there's no way to say all. Some of them no one cares about, but they've gotten in, trouble's not the right word, lots of pain from many of their variances over the years, right? So real estate agents or local, you know, residents or their fire department, they just have a huge number of variances up there. And over the years, if you go back through the Island Gazette, you can see multiple comments about some of the variances they have. So I think I, like Mr. Benton and like the people I've interviewed for P&Z, and predisposed to not do variances. Having said that, I don't want to spend a lot of the taxpayers' money trying to redesign something when we already cut it down right. So I would propose to council that we have the building inspector tell us exactly what the variance needs for one property for the fire department and do that as opposed to a broad-based generic, we're going to exempt the whole town, right? So that's sort of where I'm at. So.
Okay, I somehow, the only other person in the world who can read my mind is my youngest son. You keep saying exactly what I'm thinking.
Okay.
And I mean, ever since our last meeting, I have thought about this over and over and over again. And frankly, Mr. Benton, I'm glad you brought it back up again tonight. I am really opposed to it being a just sweeping slate of every building we ever build from now till the end of time. I would rather something be exclusive to this one. And I still have not seen a drawing where it tells me exactly where this is going. And I would like to see that before I approve anything.
Well, I have no problem agreeing if that's the way that we end up going. I don't think that'll hurt the town at all anyway, but what I want to bring up to you is that if we put this off for another month,
I'm not willing to put it off because I know we've got month. That's why I think council needs to talk about it and resolve where we are. I'm willing right now to make a motion that it specifically addresses one building in town for the exact amount of setback that the current design has, and that's it. If anyone, you know, if two others are up with me,
I'm willing to give it.
And I'm okay with that. It keeps it down to one specific building.
Right.
It makes the town in the future have to defend each time
right.
if this yeah. ever comes up again.
It would have to be approved by council every time.
Yes,
so.
Yeah.
Well, and it goes back to the full process. So P&Z mm-hmm. has to advertise. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is citizens get to know about it, right? I mean, I'm surprised only one citizen's here.
Me too. There were a few at the P&Z meeting.
Right, so at the P&Z meeting, there yes. were how many? Four? Five?
There were three or four that spoke.
Right, so four citizens out of 2,500 property
owners.
They
live by the community center.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Five citizens out of 2,500 property owners, right? And so either that says everyone trusts us, which would surprise me a little bit, or people are like, yeah, whatever, you know. But they should be aware that they have the town owns properties in multiple districts. I mean, there's property down like by 4 or 502 South, and there's property over in Beachwalk / whatever they want to call it.
Sandman.
Yeah, Sandman. Right.
But one thing, fortunately, about this is the property that abuts the property that we're looking at is also ours.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of a property line that we own both sides of the property line. So.
Did you make the motion?
I will. I want a discussion before. I said I'm ready to make a motion. I'll be glad to make it, but okay. I wanted everyone to be able to talk.
Yeah, and I can understand the whole, you know, timeline and the unbelievable problems it would create to delay it. But I will also have to say to anybody who was part of this or responsible for this, I am very disappointed that we don't have more detailed information at our last meeting and especially at this meeting, because I would just like to have more detailed information to see exactly what it is.
Well,
but meanwhile,
well,
I agree with
the
you.
Town,
we
the town
can't
clerk and I
afford to
have
delay
requested
it.
That information from the architect.
Well, we have
it. We have
plans.
Well,
drawings.
Yeah. I know.
We
exactly
have
right.
Just have
we
to look have at
Mr. Attorney, point of order. Zoning. Can we say the one lot only? I mean, we have this conversation.
We do it for the residents with only one lot
well,
only.
Well, that means it's not legal.
No, but variances are, it's what you call it.
Yeah. There's a reason we did it the way that we did it, because we spent 2 or 3 hours looking at different alternatives. So, Mr. Attorney,
well,
I don't see why we can't do
this property is unique in that what we're trying to do would only occur on this one piece of property only. And,
well, you can make it for all property, say it's only for fire departments. And then we're only going to have one because we're never going to have two in the town.
I think you're right. It's a variance to an existing thing. So,
but there's some other problems that have arisen in my mind, which I would like to talk to council about later.
Again, talking about it later puts it off to next month.
Yeah, no. Well, is that because are the problems because they need to be a closed session problem or?
Yes.
Well, we have a closed session at the end, so I make a motion we move this to the end to understand the attorney's concerns since they seem to be closed session related.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Paid parking. And I believe a couple of months ago, and you have this in your book here, I brought you a 2-page list of some, but not necessarily all of the issues that we need to make some decisions on that have to do not just with paid parking, but parking in general. And the interesting thing is that our police chief has now come up with several pages, many of them addressing some of the issues I brought to you, and then some issues I didn't even, and I guess maybe some of us never realized that we don't even have ordinances to address.
The chief's been working on this for about 3 months.
Yeah, that he feels very strongly need to be addressed. Now, I believe Joseph felt like all of this should be the council's decision, and we could probably sit here and spend an entire meeting discussing just one of these issues, let alone the dozens of them that have been presented to you.
Well, let me make a suggestion. We have an election coming up. We've got the potential for possibly new people being on council.
Three new.
I'd like to kick this can down the road.
Since you're retired?
I would like for y'all to solve it now.
I don't say mean we
then,
can't
then no pay parking.
I make a motion no pay parking. And it doesn't mean we couldn't put private citizen Dugan in charge of it.
He's smarter than that.
I mean,
I would like to think so.
So I guess, Madam Mayor, is the police chief asking us to do something or telling us there's an issue we need to work on?
The police chief, at council's request, looked up ordinances that we now have and also ordinances that he thinks that we would need to add if we went to pay parking.
Correct.
So that's what
we may not need some of them.
No, we have parking close to a fire plug. That has nothing to do with paid parking. We ought to have an ordinance on how close you can park to a fire plug. Most of these are things he needs.
Was there a motion?
No.
You just said you wanted to kick the can down the road. Are you going to make a motion on that?
No, because I'm going to be the one who's not here deciding whether there's going to be a motion or not, because it won't affect me.
Well, so back to my question. Madam Mayor, since you brought this up, I just got to understand, right? So the police chief or whoever did this did a great job of pointing out that there are North Carolina general statutes for fire hydrant and blocking private driveways and other things. So is he asking for the things he doesn't say is already there to fix or to take stuff off the books? Or I don't understand exactly
what
he's asked.
Some of these that are state law are not in our ordinances.
They don't have to be in our ordinance if they're in state law.
State law, the state takes precedence.
But it's at least to make people aware that that's...
And also to know how much the ticket is going to be. He's indicated over and over again.
Different pricing
for the tickets.
And he also stated to me, I'll let him speak for himself when he gets the next meeting, but he also stated to me that if parking turns out to be a police responsibility, you ain't going to get it on what the manpower he's got.
Okay, I see the note. Okay. So, back to it again, I think I agree with Mr. Dugan. When the council turns over, someone can take the work committee, and I'm not volunteering with a parking guy either. And I'll be glad. I think we should have a separate meeting and invite the public to talk about parking issues if that's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. But I think, unless I misunderstand our police chief, parking right now, just like in the 70s when I was a kid, is about the same as it's always been in Curie Beach. Mm-hmm. On the heavy weekends, you're aggravated, you can't find somewhere to park, and if you live in the wrong place, someone parks in front of your house every once in a while.
He feels but, it's a problem we'll always have.
Right. I don't, my sense of it, this is an old guy's sense of it, is it's the same as it's always been. And the people that moved down for the first 5 years are aggravated as crap about parking, and then they recognize, wow, it's like it was when I moved here. And I can guarantee you there are pictures that people have in town from the 50s and 60s where cars were parked all over the place on K Avenue. Because when people want to come to Curie Beach, they come, and then when there's nowhere to park, they go away. I'm not saying we can't work on it. I'll support council, but I'm just saying that, and I wish our police chief was here. If our police chief said there's a public safety or public nuisance issue, I have 500 complaints from citizens about parking, I'd be really up for working on this. But there's plenty of good work to do for the town that if the citizens aren't telling us, coming and screaming at us that parking is a big problem, if there's not big money to be made so I can lower their taxes, I don't see what we're working on.
Okay, well, you brought up yourself that pay parking is going to push everybody into the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? They're already pushed into the neighborhoods.
So let's put very beautiful.
I can go out my backyard and, you know, right over there in the old Hanby Beach, people are coming in and parking in the streets. Coming up C Lane.
Parking in the streets. They're parking in the streets.
On the sides where they're not supposed to be.
What?
While they're
in the public
right of way,
you're allowed to park in.
They're on C Lane, they're doing it. In Curie Beach Village Way, it is not just in the older neighborhoods. It's.
And my question is where are all the citizens
now
that are spun up about it?
So, well, if you're the only one concerned, we don't have to do anything.
No. If citizens come to me and tell me it's an issue, I'm all for working on it. I'm just saying, up here, and Nancy, for town hall, and our building inspector, how many calls have you guys got this summer about any parking issues in town? Just in general. 1, not 10, sure. 100, 1,000.
I don't get very many tourist-related parking issues.
The only feedback I got was locals who didn't want to pay to park.
Right, Nancy.
Why should I pay to go to Jack Michaels?
Yeah, Nancy, how many calls does town hall get about parking?
No, but you have had some residents come and complain about.
Oh, I'm not saying there's zero. There's no issue in town that there's zero complaints about.
And you have a couple of HOAs that are having issues.
And so have they asked the town to do something about it?
I think one came last year.
Okay, council, one. I'm not saying there is no issue in this town that someone has not complained about over the 4 years I've been on.
Well,
including,
you know,
planes flying over and people leaving their cars running while they get out of them and parking in the street.
Okay.
I'm just saying, there is no.
Now, we can put this to rest tonight because, just like I said Saturday morning to a whole group of people at the community center, you can always vote to do nothing. And we can vote to do nothing on all of this. Or we can have two or three people look at it and provide us with recommendations, and we can go down the list and say yes, no, yes, no, yes,
I think,
no.
Well,
or we
can
vote to do nothing.
I think you put together, I'm not put together, but I think we move it to the next council. I think I like David's idea about you get some input from the community.
Right.
And from my perspective, I'm not necessarily a fan of paid parking, but I do think we need to manage parking. We could do a better job managing parking.
Oh, there's a number of things here. If the decision is no paid parking, we still.
Well, that's the point. And I think
the police department had,
like I had
not
mentioned
necessarily
before,
an individual.
This isn't a paid parking committee. It should be a managing parking committee or something, even if it's a committee. But we need to set some guidelines and some structure, and we're not going to do that tonight, and we're not going to do it now.
Well, no, that's why I said my suggestion is, Jim and I agree it should go to the next council, but it shouldn't just go there. The citizens should be invited in.
Yeah.
Well, January is fine with me.
Yeah, let's do a January.
And they should understand that
broken in.
If you say you want to do this,
we have guns.
It's going to cost another police officer or parking enforcement person. It's $40,000 a year to do this.
You look at some of these. Some of them are as simple as how many of you have driven down K Avenue from Fort Fisher to Atlantic and you can't get down there because there are pickup trucks that are so long and stuck out so far. Well, we can't get fire trucks down there at all when you do that. Okay, that's not going to cause us to hire a new police officer.
Harold says he can.
It's going to allow the police and fire department both to say to people, you cannot park a truck that big here. You've got to find somewhere else to do it.
Okay, I make a motion we direct the new council to have a public hearing on this in January.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
No.
Okay.
That's a recommendation.
Did you say no?
Nope.
He says no. This is a do nothing.
I'm sorry, it's 4-1?
4-1. There will always be 4-1.
Excuse me. Point of clarification. What does this mean? Pay parking or parking?
Just parking.
Just
in general.
Parking in general.
There will be one new person in council.
For sure. That's right. One.
Make that.
Okay.
In charge.
That's right. The new person's in charge.
Okay. Well, now where are we? Okay. We have no new business. Mayor updates. I have my first board meeting with the North Carolina League of Municipalities, and while I have been given blanket approval to go to their meetings at the town expense, this one for 3 days will cost the town $85.
Make a motion we approve $85 for the mayor to attend.
Second.
Thank you. Oh, all favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Do we have anything from the individual council members?
I have one item, one quick item. There has been a great deal of discussion about our fire station and spending that is related to it. I had made reference that people are really asking the incorrect questions. They need to understand where are we deficient, as opposed to why are we spending the money. So I did offer, and Jim agreed, if we could set aside a day and advertise it where we could have the department heads, I know we did this on October 17th, guys, but it wasn't well attended, where we could actually have a walkthrough of the buildings and show the people what the current conditions are, and then they could have a sense for why it is necessary.
So do you have a date when that would be?
I think it should be, I don't, but I think it should be sooner rather than later, because we need to put that question, we need to put that confidence into the community, I think. So do you have a day that would work for you? Do we have to advertise that with any certain amount of time, Nancy?
It needs to be seen because I'm
yeah, we're moving in a couple of weeks, so.
Okay, when are we moving in November?
I would have
November
this whole council room covered
first.
Okay, let's pick a day the last week of October.
Okay.
What works for you?
Do you mean Halloween?
Halloween. There you go, John. Halloween. Like the way you
did. The last full week of October
is next.
It's next week.
Right. So why don't we look at the 25th to the 26th? Jim, which works for you?
Both of them.
Okay, let's do it the 26th. Can we advertise that, Nancy? And we do have to talk to the department heads.
Right. Yeah, you got
to
make sure.
I guess that may fall to me since this is.
So what are you?
You're opening open house all day long?
No, it's not an open house. We're going to schedule. Hey, there's going to be. Okay, I'll be clear. At 1 o'clock, we will begin a walkthrough, or maybe it should be 4 o'clock. We'll make a decision. We'll begin a walkthrough of the buildings to show the population why we are building new structures. And it'll be, I don't know, probably an hour or two, or I wouldn't expect it to be more than that.
Right.
The current buildings aren't that big.
I strongly advise you to talk to your department heads first.
Right. Well, I will definitely talk to the department heads, but we all work for the citizens. So it's going to be the 26th.
I support you all, but I probably won't be here. So the issue is you got to make sure the department heads are available.
Are aware.
You're going to be leading the tour by yourself, right?
Or they have an individual who can do it.
So from 4 to 5, is that what you think?
4 to 5 would be my guess.
Does that work, Nancy?
1 hour?
Yeah.
Now,
I suspect it.
Of shift at the fire at the police department, isn't it?
I believe there's 6 to 6.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, 12 hours, 6 to 6. So that shouldn't affect the shift. And the chief's on 24 hours a day anyway, just like our fire chief. So. Okay.
So you're signing you and Jim up? Because Joe will be at work, I'll be at work.
I'll take off.
Okay. And
I'll actually be a part of that.
Okay.
And I won't be here.
There you go. Okay.
So, is that a motion?
Is there a motion? I'll second Craig's motion.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Enjoy, Craig.
Could I have a motion to go into closed session?
Motion to go into closed session.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Second.
Aye.
Okay, I would like...
Opposed.
Oh.
Okay.
Nice. 41. Okay. I make a motion to amend to the Code of Ordinances, Part 2, Code, Chapter 19, Zoning, Article 3, District Regulations, Division 1, generally Section 80, Town Buildings and Facilities. The amended section will read... Town buildings and facilities shall be permitted in all zoning districts and shall not be considered to be non-conforming to the area in which they are located. These include, but are not limited to, the town hall, town fire station, town garage, various lift stations, well sites, water storage sites. Town fire and emergency buildings and facilities shall not be subject to setback requirements. And with that, the zoning consistency statement. In part of the same motion... Motion to amend Chapter 19, Zoning, Article 3, District Regulations, Division 1, generally Section 80, Town Buildings and Facilities of the Code of Ordinances exempting town buildings, town fire and emergency buildings and facilities from setback requirements. This recommendation is consistent with the objectives, policies of the Town of Curie Beach Land Use Plan adopted by Council September 27, 2006 and Coastal Resources Commission November 17, 2006. Part 2, Section 2, Policies for Growth and Development, Section 39, Subsections B, is the policy of the town to enhance and improve fire protection capabilities. C, it is the policy of the town to provide timely, cost-effective capital facilities and community infrastructure services based on anticipated growth and demand. The amendment is necessary to build a new fire station. The community will benefit by adequate facilities for staff to provide 24/7 timely response to fire and other life-threatening emergencies with trained EMS and firefighters on location within the town. So moved.
Second.
What does this no change mean?
That means that this one's fine. You signed. That's what I read. Huh. I read the red. She said.
But we didn't vote.
Yeah.
So it's, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So moved.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Excellent. Make a motion to close.
Adjourn.
This meeting. Adjourn.
Second.
Aye.
In favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Then we have to
be out. Thank you for keeping us straight, Miss Nancy.
Yes, Miss Nancy.
Mr. Attorney, thank you for keeping us from violating the laws of the great state, this fine state of North Carolina.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys didn't see it at my retirement because they didn't read it out because the other guy didn't get anything from the state, but I got the old North State Award from the governor.
Yes, he did. Yes,
well,
yes,
he didn't read it out in here. No, he didn't. Yeah.
Get him out of the way.
Get away, Craig.
I didn't give
get out of the way.
No, get out.
Get out.
Don't but, make me use this.
Please don't.
Did you sign the consistency statement?
As far as I know.
Okay.